Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
All right, welcome to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. We are here with you every single week, and what a week seven it was. We have a lot of things to get to tonight, but first let me remind you that we are presented by Hewitt Domodiros Law, hdlawsc.com, the best in the business for not just personal injury, but so many more things. If you need attorneys to represent you or your family, you are going to get to know these guys, Brad and Dean, at hdlawsc.com. That's Hewitt Domodiros Law. Give them a call. Tell them that you heard about them on SEC Sunday Night. All right, Craig, week seven has been fun. We've had a lot going on. We had a little
That's red so happy river. In Happy Valley, but I guess it's been fun for some.
We had a little Red River. We had a little interesting happenings on the plains. We had some close calls in Como. Relatively tight one in Baton Rouge. We've had some fun. Mm-hmm. So we got some friends to get in here tonight. We want to talk about stuff. But before we really get rolling, let's flip over to Oxford, where we had Daily Joy on the SEC Pretty Campus Tour. And let's check out what she and I had to say going into the weekend, so we can see who ends up on I Was Wrong. Do you have something for me before we jump over there?
Just real quick to our good friend Joy. Still waiting for my SEC Pretty Bulldog hat. I thought the Bulldog sticks together. Come on, Joy.
What the heck, Joy? All right, yeah. So if you're new to us and guys who are in the chat box, make sure you let new people know that this segment was recorded on Friday and it is for the purpose of us figuring out who was wrong. We'll be back in just a minute after you hear from me and Joy in Oxford. Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. And as we are every week, we are joined by our good friend Daily Joy, who is the founder and owner of SEC Pretty. But this week, Joy, before we get into any of this stuff, you and I have beef. Okay. And normally I'm very neutral and impartial on this show, and I don't wear things that are garnet and black necessarily. However, this week, knowing that you would come on in purple and gold, I had to make sure that I was ready for that because we have quite the matchup between LSU and South Carolina. A little bit of a revenge opportunity for Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks. We'll get into that here in just a few minutes. But first of all, tell us about what you got going on this week. Where are you headed on the SEC Pretty Campus Tour?
I'm headed to Oxford, Mississippi. We're going to go see Washington State at Ole Miss. The reality of this process is that I'm paying for all of this on my own. So you can't always go to the biggest game every week. And I really intentionally didn't want to repeat any stadiums. There is a game that if you know me as an LSU fan, then you know that there's one particular school that I hate more than I hate anyone else. And they happen to come to Baton Rouge this year. So that is my LSU trip. So couldn't be in Death Valley this weekend. So figured Oxford, Vaught, Hemingway. Let's go watch them play while they're still undefeated, because we all know that won't last. It's Lane Kiffin after all.
Oh, joy. Joy, joy, joy. We're going to get into that as well, talking about the Rebels and a program that Craig and I have been really high on since the preseason. And so we'll get your thoughts here in just a few minutes. But let's start where we know we have to start. What are the keys to the game in Baton Rouge on Saturday night? Because obviously you and I have had some back and forth. I'll let everybody know. I proposed multiple bets. Joy turned them all down because no matter what she's about to say, she lacks a little bit of faith and confidence in what the Tigers are going to be able to do on Saturday night against the Gamecocks. We'll see which one of us ends up here. Here it is. We'll just see who ends up on I Was Wrong. That's really what it all comes down to. Seriously, what are your keys to the game? What do you think needs to happen for LSU? We'll let you speak from that perspective.
I just find this so funny because I am so realistic, like painfully realistic when it comes to LSU. So for you to say, like, regardless of what she says, she doesn't have a lot of faith. No, duh, I don't have a lot of faith. I haven't had a lot of faith for weeks now because we don't understand what's happening at the quarterback position. I obviously, like, your quarterback play has to be great. And I'm going to say quarterback play. I'm not going to say Nussmeier play because I don't know who's playing. If you talk to Brian Kelly, he's going to tell you it's Garrett Nussmeier all day long. If you have paid attention to social media or listened to anyone that's actually like inside the program, Michael Van Buren took all first team reps last week. Now, is that because Nussmeier needed to rest and really like give his oblique a break? Could be. I don't know. And I feel like we've been pretty gaslit by Brian Kelly, if I'm being honest, for the last couple of weeks. So your quarterback play has to be solid. It doesn't have to be like the most overwhelming quarterback play you've ever seen, but it does have to be there. And then, you know, our defense has been phenomenal all season long. That has not been a question mark that we've had. I think the key to the defense is going to be getting rest, which happens when your offense is on the field. So again, everything kind of comes down to what's happening on the offensive side of the ball. I think this will be a game that Lenora Sellers gets painfully familiar with Harold Perkins Jr. You didn't get to see him last year, and we still took the dub. So, ironically, you know, our best athlete wasn't even playing last year, and we beat you on your own field. So, I'm feeling pretty good about the odds for the Tigers and Baton Rouge.
Well, you only got a Lenora Sellers for half of the game last year, and so,
That's like a personal problem, honestly.
God willing, he plays the entire game this year, and if I recall correctly, when he went out of the game, South Carolina was up by 17 points. So we'll see what happens.
And then you blew a 17-point lead.
We'll
and
see what happens. We'll see what happens when this segment is played on Sunday night. Who is standing in the winner's circle? For sure, I think that Lenora Sellers, as I've said multiple times here on the Chief Sports Network this week, needs 12 to 14 carries. He needs to hit the 75-yard mark on the ground, and that unlocks the offense for South Carolina. If he's able to make that happen on scramble plays, they don't have to all be designed runs. There's going to be options, right? A lot of these plays, he has an option to give it to a back. He has an option to throw the ball, and he has an option to take off. He needs to make the decision to put his head down and go. Or if he gets flushed by someone like Harold Perkins, who is likely not to be able to get him on the ground by himself, because that hardly ever happens. If he can get out and go, and we get to the 75-yard mark on the ground for Lenora Sellers alone, I think that speaks largely for the offense. Now, here's the thing I'll say in closing about this game in general, because you said a lot of it depends on the offense for LSU, and then we'll move on to Red River. Is I had a coach tell me one time that football, now very offensive-minded coach, but football is offense versus offense. Forget about the defenses. Just imagine that both offenses are going to get 8 possessions a game, and it's how many times can you score versus how many times their offense scores. So your goal as an offense is to go out and score 8 out of 8 times, and then you don't give them an opportunity. If you score 6 out of 8 times, then you're probably in a good spot. And so to your point, I'll be kind of watching to see how efficient both of these offenses can be who have struggled a little bit over the course of the season. We obviously understand that LSU's defense is good, better than it was last year, improved personnel. South Carolina's defense is, as we said last week, streaky, but loves to take the ball away and loves to score when they do. So it'll be interesting to see if it is Garrett Nussmeier, because, by the way, oblique injuries don't heal on a week of rest. They take months. If there's a lack of velocity or accuracy with this football, I can guarantee you the South Carolina secondary is going to take advantage of that. So we'll see kind of which offense finds their footing. And I think really that ultimately is who wins the football game.
It's so interesting that your coach said that, because I've had national champions tell me that defense wins championships. So I'm going to err on that side of the ball every day of the week.
Offensive coordinators, right? I mean, what are you going to do? Okay. Now, we have a very interesting developing story going on for the Red River Shootout between Texas and Oklahoma. We know that John Mateer had surgery, and there is this up-in-the-air discussion about whether or not he was going to be healthy. We heard 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks. We've heard all kinds of things. And what that said to me was nobody has a freaking clue. Okay. So how, just like Garrett Nussmeier, how healthy is John Mateer coming into this game? I don't think it matters. I think that the Sooners are going to put Arch on his back 6 to 8 times. And that's going to be the story of the game because Texas offensive line looks like it has struggled. And we know if anything, Brent Venables can get the defense going.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. The only caveat I have to that is that these are the games where logic and like what we know completely go out the window. There have been years that this rivalry alone has like sent one of these teams into a complete spiral. Like we've had years that one of these teams has walked in undefeated and got their brains beat out. I agree with you on the line play.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hey, obviously, I think so much of games are determined in the trenches, and Texas offensive line has been abysmal this season. I think that's one thing that probably Arch is getting a lot of the backlash for, and some of it isn't his fault. Like, he doesn't have time to be accurate. He doesn't have time to think quick on his feet because he's on his behind quicker than he knows what to do. And that is an offensive line problem. I think the defensive line for Oklahoma is phenomenal, which that is to be expected. It's Brent Venables. Like, a Brent Venables defense is an iconic defense at best. I tend to agree with you. I do think Oklahoma wins this game, but I do wonder, like, is this the game for Texas? Like, we've heard about them all offseason. Obviously, we know that they're not winning the national championship. Like, that team isn't capable of doing that. But the reality is like, teams like this usually do come out and pull a game that they really shouldn't pull. Do they bounce back after an embarrassing loss at Florida? I think there's some questions about this team. I think this week, really, obviously it's a rivalry game. So yeah, logic and mind go out the window, but at the same time, like, you're going to find out the character of this Texas team this week. Last week, they thought they were going to win. They didn't win. I think they're going to come in here. They know that they're not anticipated to walk out of here victorious. And so you're really going to find out the character of this offensive line, of Arch Manning. What this team is made of will be determined and on site this weekend.
Yeah, it's always going to be fun at the Red River Shootout. So I'm interested to see kind of where this lands. We're both picking Oklahoma. I think that's pretty clear. And we split our picks on South Carolina and LSU. Here's a different kind of question. You're headed to Oxford. Mm-hmm. Has Ole Miss done enough where we should expect the college football playoff at this point? Just really quickly to set you up, and this will be it, and we'll get out of here, is that, you know, Ole Miss at this point in the season has these games remaining. Washington State, who they're favored by, you know, 35+. At Georgia, at Oklahoma, South Carolina, the Citadel, Florida, and Mississippi State. They can lose two of those games and still probably make it into the college football playoff. Is it an expectation for Lane Kiffin and this group to at least make it into the field?
I think there's two different questions you could ask here. Is that the expectation from college football fans, or is that the expectation from their fan base? Because and this is not a diss at Ole Miss. This is factual information. You historically have not been a program that exceeded expectations in the postseason. Like, y'all have historically been a program that really enjoyed a good bowl game in all actuality. So I don't know if the expectation for their fan base is that. I think if you look at it from just a college football perspective, you would say, okay, odds are you're probably going to drop the game to Georgia because it's at Georgia. I think South Carolina could be a test for them. The Egg Bowl is just like the Red River Shootout. It's a crapshoot. Like, and I don't know if I don't know if Mississippi State is getting talked about enough. I understand that their record isn't phenomenal, but now granted, y'all talked about them last week and ended up on the You Were Wrong segment. One of us was right. But the reality is like, Mississippi State is not a bad football team. They gave A&M hell for three quarters in all actuality. So that game is tricky. I think the problem for me with Ole Miss is we've talked about it on the show numerous times with numerous matchups. About things being mental. I'm not so sure that also isn't a Lane Kiffin issue. every year it feels like that he has the team. Like, there were moments last year we were like, oh, they're going to make the college football playoff, and then they drop games to Florida. Like, it's so for me, I need to see Lane Kiffin continue to win out before I'm going to give him any benefit of the doubt that he's going to make the college football playoff. And that's really not even a diss at Ole Miss's football program. It's not a diss of any of those players on the field. The reality is he's had more talented rosters and lost games he never should have lost. And so I worry that that's going to happen again this season.
Very clear that Joy has still not watched the E60 special with Ryan McGee on Lane Kiffin and needs to do that so that she can understand the new mindset of one Lane Kiffin. All right, so have fun in Oxford, Joy. We know that you have a lot going on with SEC Pretty, and we're riding with you all the way as you have the crew necks out and ready to roll, and then also SEC Petty Hats this week. So for all of you trolls out there,
exactly,
at Lane Kiffin, go ahead and get you one of those as well. Joy, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Rob.
This is SEC Sunday Night on the Chief Sports Network.
Live on the Chief Sports Network, we are joined by our good friend Lewis Johnson, who is with us, who covers LSU for Last Word on College Football, and also you can follow along with him and watch his show with The Voice on College Football covering the Tigers as well. I'm going to make sure that you do that. I know that many of you in our comments tonight may be coming from all over the country and all over the SEC, but as always, there's a good contingent of Gamecocks in there, and so we're going to get to this game and break it down. I can already see several Tigers showing up over there in the chat as well. So we're going to welcome you guys. And also, I'll just say before we get going, boys, that there's a few things I was wrong about. Obviously, Joy and I both picked Oklahoma. So I'll raise my hand for I was wrong on that one. As Craig continues to throw that hook 'em up in my face, we're going to let you talk. We're going to let you talk and hold up your biggest arch poster. You know, we know you have one on the wall in your bedroom. And so if you want to run and get it while I go over the scores, you can hold it up on the screen and talk about Arch Manning. All right, let me just run through
the scores. How did South Carolina do?
I'm just going to run through the scores.
Lou wants to know. Lou was asking.
Well, we're going to get to that. That's perfect because I'm about to run over the scores right now just so everybody's caught up. Ole Miss 24-21 over Wazoo, much closer than we expected. Joy was there in Oxford. This was a game where they were favored by 35+. And we saw it was only a 3-point game. Texas A&M takes care of Florida 34-17, competitive early. And the Aggies pull away Texas in the Red River Shootout.
Oh?
23-6. Down 6-3. Shuts Oklahoma out in the second half. Three picks for John Mateer. Ooh. Alabama squeaks one out 27-24 over Missouri in Como. Is Missouri a college football playoff contender? We'll get there in a few minutes. Georgia and Auburn in the Deep South's oldest rivalry. The Bulldogs come out on top 20-10. Over Auburn with a little bit of help, perhaps. All right. Tennessee gets it done over Bobby P and the Hogs 34-31. Almost an upset for Petrino in his time there as the interim. I still believe Arkansas clips somebody at some point. LSU gets it done at home over South Carolina 20-10 in a game that, in all honesty, was kind of disgusting to watch on both sides of the ball from an offensive standpoint. If you like defensive football, there's a lot of that going on. Okay, so in the wake of that, we know we have some changes today. We know we've talked about some big head coaching moves across the country. The firing, obviously, of James Franklin has made waves from Penn State and had put everybody on notice. Shane Beamer, in the wake of the game last night, let go of offensive line coach Lonnie Teasley, and so changes are being made on the Gamecock staff. After tons of pre-snap penalties, stalled drives out for the Gamecocks last night when they were in position to keep it competitive in Baton Rouge. Welcome to Lou. Congratulations on the win last night, sir. What is your overall take on the day? Let's start there. and then we'll dive in specifically. But just overall, how was your weekend? Did you enjoy some ball?
Yeah, man, I did. And thanks again. Appreciate y'all having me on. But yesterday was pretty much like every other Saturday we've seen, as far as I'm concerned. It's just more proof that you don't know what the hell is going to happen from week to week. Like, the more you watch, the less you know. You see Penn State going down again and Northwestern. Northwestern lost to Tulane. Nothing against Tulane, but it's easily one of the worst teams in the Big Ten. You lose to Northwestern. Texas, Oklahoma, you already know. Whatever you expect to happen in Texas, Oklahoma, the opposite is going to happen. So we know how that's going to go. But it's just another crazy week. Indiana looks for real.
How crazy is that, Lou? Like, nuts, Indiana, like, AP number two, just behind Ohio State?
Yeah, and I'm glad to see them show up against a real team. Like, I was pretty critical of Indiana last year because Cignetti, even though I like him and he's entertaining, he talks a lot of trash for somebody who's scared to schedule people outside of the conference. So, him going on the road, getting a win like that, hey, look, kudos to him. I tip my hat. Yep. You got to give Cignetti some credit. That was a wild one, but they look pretty impressive, we think, because who is Oregon beating?
Penn State.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that looked a hell of a lot. That looked a hell of a lot more impressive two weeks ago.
This is the problem we keep running into, and we had this discussion last week, is when we say they're good because they beat Team X, well, then the follow-up still is, who is Team X beating? And we don't really – and we just don't really – you can pull at that rope all day, and it just – there's no end to it. Craig.
The conversation we had yesterday?
What other conversation?
Yeah, well, we had a handful of conversations, but about, like, talent, right? Like, who's good? And yeah. The missing piece with, like, outside of maybe that team in Columbus – is nobody has FU talent. Nobody is just, stop it. Get out of here with that Miami.
They have great talent at the quarterback position in Miami.
Yeah, and they don't have great talent. That's what really does well for them. The coaching position. So, like, let's wait until they choke here in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, but, back to your FU talent.
Okay, this is my theory, and Lou, I'd love to hear your thoughts. You know, traditionally, LSU for a time, I'm thinking 2019 LSU, Alabama would seem like forever under Nick Saban, Georgia 2021, 2022, just had that talent where they were just bigger, stronger, and faster than everybody else, and they could just basically smack the hell out of everybody. Nobody has that this year. Those margins are thin. I mean, you look at, you know, Alabama, Mizzou, and Como yesterday. Mizzou took him all the way through. I mean, hats off to Drink. He hasn't shown up in many of these big games, but everything is so close. And this is the hardest part I know I'm having as a Georgia fan. Kirby Smart has won at Knoxville, and he's won in the Plains this year. Yet, I texted Rob, and I'm like, hey, just wait. Georgia's going to be down at least 14-0 to start this game. And it was almost 17-0.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's just the expectation. Like, these margins are thin. There's not the difference. It's the talent gap. I feel like we have, you know, your ceiling of how good you can be has lowered. And then the floor has also raised up so that these margins are super thin now. And it's makes for exciting and some chaos. But traditional powers, Rob, we'll let you sit this one out. I'm gonna defer to Lou on this one. You're LSU and you're Georgia. You're not used to this.
It's the depth, man. You see the same teams that still sit atop the rankings every year. But it's the depth that you can't really build a team the way you used to. You can't go three deep with five stars. Those days are over. They're going to leave. And look, the poor mid-majors, the ULMs of the world, you can't keep a star. Mod Hardy, ULM never had a shot in hell of keeping that guy there for another season. But yeah, in this day and age, you can't stack those rosters the way you used to. And it's just going to be more and more parity. And you'll see the teams with the best coaches and the best quarterbacks kind of separate themselves. You look at a Miami, and, man, look at what the difference that a system can make for a quarterback. Carson Beck looked like garbage last year. And you know he had the tools. He has the size. He can make every throw you want him to make. Now he gets in a different system, and you got more explosive weapons. He looks like a first-rounder again.
It's really helpful when your receivers and your tight ends catch the football, Lou, when they don't lead the country in drops after you lose Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers.
But if you look, if you look at numbers, and God forbid we look at a little bit of data, his numbers were actually better last year than they were this year.
This is all we need right here, Craig.
That offense looks better, though.
Stats are for articles. Go write me something up. We're going to use the eye test around here for just a minute.
Okay, when Miami gets smashed, I personally want an apology from both of you because defending Carson Beck, the Cavender twins and I all want an apology from you.
Speaking of eye tests, Lou, let's talk about what happened in Baton Rouge last night. What do you see from LSU? Craig, let me tee up your question here for you, whether you want to say it or you want me to. I'll take it. Is LSU good?
It's for Craig or it's for me?
No, this is for you.
LSU is talented. I'm not sure how good they are. Like yesterday, in my opinion, that was one of the most predictable games that was still kind of unpredictable because you got two offenses that you don't know what you're going to get. But predictable in a sense of, okay, BK, Brian Kelly's been talking about running the ball for weeks now. You know that LSU was going to come out and put more of an emphasis on running the ball. They're coming off a bye, and they're at home. So you assume that South Carolina's going to make some plays, but the talent level of LSU is just going to kind of separate towards the end of the game, and that's eventually how it played out. But, of course, you had some silliness in between with the turnovers and some head-scratching calls. So that game played out pretty much the way I expected. Last week on my show on YouTube, I said that LSU would need at least 27 carries. And I figured that was close enough to 30, but you can't go crazy and think that LSU all of a sudden is going to turn into some bruisers up front and run the ball 30 times. I didn't expect that, but that would be enough to say, look, we're going to go for balance. We're going to at least strive for balance. If we get it, great. And what I didn't expect was for LSU to get 6 yards a carry. Even against South Carolina, who hasn't been able to stop the run, I think 6 yards a carry kind of went beyond my expectations. The funny thing with South Carolina is I thought they would run Sellers more, and they did as far as attempts, but LSU was able to corral them. But the running backs for South Carolina, who hadn't done much from what I saw, went off. But again, LSU's defense kind of saved the day. You get one big run, I think, like, what, 72 yards in the first half. And other than that, LSU's defense was stout as usual. And Nussmeier was able to make enough plays. We got the Clemson Nussmeier and not the Ole Miss Nussmeier. And that was the difference.
Yeah, I think from a South Carolina perspective, you know, the results of the day reflect how most of South Carolina fans would say that they feel coming out of the day yesterday, and that is that Shane Beamer fired the offensive line coach. Okay, so, I mean, obviously going into the game, you had three guys who didn't travel due to injury. Then you have an injury early in the game to the left guard, which shook up the lineup up front again. And there's been some questionable performances from some of these offensive linemen, especially some of the transfers that came in the portal during the offseason. And so I think that the way that the offensive line was shuffled against Kentucky a couple of weeks ago for South Carolina gave them a little bit of a light. And then going into this game, you have an early injury that shuffled it back and put some players back in positions where they've been early in the year. And we saw the same results where LSU didn't really have to do much. We know Blake Baker's going to blitz. That's his MO, and that's what he's going to do. But you didn't have to do much in terms of complicated or exotic anything when you have linemen who are in the wrong place, got their eyes in the wrong spot, and just whiff and let guys run through the line of scrimmage. Then it becomes what can Lenora Sellers do and how can he become Superman to put this team on his back? One question that I'll ask you, Lou, just because I would love to get the LSU perspective, is what were your thoughts on the fake punt call by Shane Beamer that was blown dead? Obviously, let's put our purple and gold and garnet and black aside for a minute and look at SEC officiating over the course of the year. And I'm gonna go ahead and mute Craig before we have this conversation, because there was some questionable SEC officiating going on the plains last night too. Did you see what their reasoning was for blowing that play dead? And what is your thought on the overall performance of officials, and where is your stance on how we should continue to evaluate them?
So I read where the whole issue with the flag was they didn't wait for the referee to, or the official to give them the go ahead and run the play. And my thoughts on it is, you know, it's just another instance of just bad officiating. And it's, I mean, that's something that happens in every game on both sides of the ball. I wouldn't say, you know, obviously it's a pivotal play. It didn't decide the game. And we see it, unfortunately, in every game, in every conference. So as far as how do you go about fixing it, I'm not sure, because it's such a big sport right now. And you got so many different conferences and nobody's really doing this full time. So you don't have full time officials and you don't have any accountability for officials. So I'm not sure how much better that's going to be until somewhere down the line you shrink these, actually grow the conferences, and you end up with an NFL style. And of course, this is projection, but this is the way, you know, pretty much everybody sees it going. And then you can have more control and more kind of a uniform way of training up all your officials and sending them out. But yeah, it's just something we got to deal with, man. You're going to see it from game to game, and hopefully it doesn't affect your team in a negative way, but it will. But as long as it affects everybody, I think that's about as fair as it's going to get.
Question.
I have a question. Go ahead.
Lou, did Ness throw two interceptions last night?
Yep.
So he made a mistake?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, you're going to get –
So he was – it's a human element. He's not a robot?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. So officials, they're human. They can make a mistake, and they're on TV, and everybody on Twitter and Reddit are like the geniuses, and like they can look at everything. And like, so let me give you a little instance here. Ready? In my joys of athletic directing last week, I got to be a line judge for a high school tennis tournament. It was really hard. Like how fast these kids are serving back and forth and determining whether things were in and out. I can only imagine the speed at which South Carolina and LSU are playing, the speed at which Auburn and Georgia are playing. Yes, there are mistakes. And guess what? The guys in the booth are so smart, and they're going to keep making all of these mistakes, and they can put every replay, and they're going to slow all this stuff down. But we're asking these people to make split-second decisions. Yes, they are not going to be perfect, but guess what? It's part of the game, and what you're going to see is that sometimes you're going to get a bad call, and the good teams and the ones with sound coaches are going to be able to rise above it.
Hey, Lou, one quick question for you as we kind of wrap that part of the segment. Did Garrett Nussmeier talk to the media last night?
I ain't gonna lie to you. I'm not sure. I listened to a little bit of Brian Kelly.
I think he probably did. I know Lenore Sellers did, and they asked him about his performance during the game. Here's all I'm saying, and two things that Lou brought up that I think are really important points here. Number one, there needs to be accountability. We need to be able to talk to referees.
These guys are scored. They're evaluated by the conference.
Show me.
No. They are.
But we can't. We can't, because they're going to keep it behind closed doors.
So what good is it going to do if you and I are sitting in a press conference and then we're asking these guys questions? Why the hell did you screw up that call? Because that's how I saw it.
That's accountability. Also to your point,
you already have people who don't want to be officials. This is the exact reason.
There is enough money to pay for full-time officials. I don't care. Full stop. Lou is right. This is not their full-time job. Why is it not? You're telling me there's not enough money to pay these guys? There's not a chance that there's not enough money in this conference to pay for full-time officials. And secondly, Garrett Nussmeier,
$3,000. They get between $1,500 and $3,000 a game. You put that out times 12, they're making $36,000 a year. That's that's awesome.
Double it. Double it and make it their full time job.
I'll take that.
You're telling me we can't double that pay and keep them on full time?
It's not that important.
Oh, it is that important, Craig. It clearly is.
If Greg Sankey thought it was that important,
if Greg Sankey thought it was that important, claims that it is, then that's the level that we should be at. And if they're in a press conference, then that provides accountability. If we're paying for them to be full time, then this is their full time job. And by the way, you can't watch the ball at the line in the tennis game. But if you had replay, I promise you, you'd be able to tell me if the ball was in or out.
Here's the thing: you already have replay.
We can break it down. You can tell me that the ball is in for Auburn at the goal line.
No. But here's the thing. You already have replay. You have the people in the Birmingham. You already have the folks in the booth. And then you've got the armchair quarterbacks here at home. And then you got the people up in the booth. And now you want to put them in front of the media to ask questions?
Absolutely.
What does that do? Really? Do you really think you're going to feel better because South Carolina got some sort of punt mixed up or Jackson Arnold may or may not have fumbled? Are we going to feel better because, I got to talk to Garrett Nussmeier about throwing two interceptions? No one gives a damn. It's not going to make a difference.
But look, on that note about accountability, let's be honest. If you're the head of one of these conferences, how much accountability do you really want? Like, I don't think that's something that these guys want. Look, this would never be admitted in public, but the conference needs certain teams to do well, like the moneymakers. And that's in college football and anything else. In the NBA, the Lakers are going to get the call. In the NFL, the Cowboys are going to get the call. Like, look, I'm no conspiracy theorist, but look, you're going to take care of your moneymakers. So I don't ever think this would be some high priority deal to get these officials out in front of everybody. Would I like that? Yeah, no. I would. I'll be honest. I think they should be held to the same standard as everybody else. We may,
but we're just salty because our team lost and we're looking for someone to blame. No,
I'm not salty because my team lost. I'm salty about Auburn as well, twice now. I'm salty about the fact
that the league came out and said they screwed up.
Consistently. Yeah.
The league came out and said they screwed up.
But we don't get to talk to those guys. And if anybody else makes a comment about it, if a coach makes a comment about it, they catch a fine.
So I'm sure that something happened to these guys. Oh, you think that Greg Sankey just dismissed it? I'm sorry. There's no accountability in putting these guys in front of a damn press conference. What is that going to do? Oh, just so you can one up them and you can dunk on them and say, oh, well, you screwed up that call and
No, I want them to explain what they're looking at, because the line of thinking that, hey, I'm going to have to sit there and explain why I made this decision is the same line of thinking that Garrett Nussmeier and Lenore Sellers and Brian Kelly and Shane Beamer and Kirby Smart and everybody else has to do.
McAfee can rip off his shirt and make an ass of them? No, I do not think that's good for
– All right, let's move on. Let's move on to the Red River rivalry here for just a moment. You can stay fired up because I'm going to let you talk about Arch. All right, so obviously we had question marks about John Mateer heading into this game. Jordan and I kind of talked about it. They did a nice feature on the broadcast and showed the x-ray with the three screws in his thumb.
Ouch.
How much is the thumb the issue? Now, there were some inaccurate throws. He throws three interceptions. The ball wasn't where it needed to be.
Yep.
But his thumb doesn't impact his ability to run the football. I think that's a bigger issue for Oklahoma, is that he's still the go-to guy when it comes to running the ball. It's not Jaden Ott. It's not somebody coming from the running back position. That is John Mateer, who is being relied on to run the football. But let's not focus too much on the fact that Oklahoma was only able to put 6 points on the board. I think that Texas deserves credit and deserves a little bit of shine in the way that they came out and performed. Everybody obviously has been all over Arch Manning, and this game he's 21 for 27 for 166 and a touchdown, which is not a stellar number, but it is an efficient number. He also ran the ball four times for 34 yards. But the thing that stuck out to me was the way that Wisner was able to just kind of have his way in staying consistent. It's not an overwhelming day. It's 22 carries for 94 yards, 4.3 yards per carry. They did not punch it in on the ground, but just overall the way that Texas was able to move the ball consistently, that 4.3 yards a carry is really what it looked like when he was running the football. His long was 37, but for the most part, it's just these little chunks. What do we think about Texas for either of you? And I know where Craig kind of lands on this. This is not a national championship team, but what kind of push can they make? And as Joy said in the segment before, this is a rivalry that can send teams spiraling. What happens to the Sooners?
So I'll look at Texas. So like here's the one part. We talked about this yesterday before the 3:30 game, and you talked about, and you even talked about Joy 6 to 8 sacks for Arch. And that was about that number that Texas let up against Florida last week. And we know Oklahoma has a good defensive line because they sacked Arnold about 10 times in the Auburn game a couple weeks ago. So hats off to the O-line for sort of getting it together. But hats off to Arch for moving that pocket and being evasive enough to continue to extend plays. I don't think Texas is a national champion, okay? And I was wrong. I had Texas at 12-0, and I thought they were going to be great, and I thought Arch was going to win the Heisman. But what I think Texas shows us is the very thing that we were talking about with Lou. There are some very good teams, especially in the SEC. You have 10 teams right now that are ranked in the AP top 25. Of those, in the teams in about the top 12 to 13, you have about 8 teams there. Probably 4 of them are going to make the college football playoff. And I think all of them are contenders. Texas A&M at the moment, right now, in this moment in time, and Alabama seem to be the front runners. Everybody else, the next 6 teams there, seem like it's about a Game of Thrones for the next 2. So Texas is doing their job. So, you know, they came out and they won the game that they should have.
Lou, thoughts on Red River?
Yeah, Texas is just going to get better and better. Look, they, of course, I'm with y'all. They're not a national championship team, but you got a young quarterback, and we talked about this before the season. I said he was going to take his lumps, and he did, but he's going to get better. He's not – you know, a lot of times we get caught up, and as fans, we think there's no in-between from being a Heisman candidate and just straight-up sucking. Oh, he's terrible. He's overrated. No, he's just a young quarterback, and he's going to grow and get better with every game. The best thing for him – is an efficient running game like they had yesterday. And you don't put so much on his shoulders and you don't put him in a spot to where he's in too many obvious passing situations. Because I think one thing that got overlooked coming into the season that is Texas doesn't have the same weapons on the perimeter as they did last year. Yeah, the backfield is still great, but they don't have the explosive guys that they had last year on the outside. Are they talented? Yes. Do they put fear in the defense? No, not from what I've seen. So they're going to get better and better. Now, from Oklahoma's perspective, I didn't like rushing Mateo back. You rush him back and you throw so much. Look, man, run the ball. You got a guy that's – okay, he ain't Vic, but Hawkins, he can run. You got a guy that – and when you get a quarterback that can run, that changes the numbers in the box. And you can, you know, have more success running the ball. So you rush this guy back. With an injury, and I think it was just too much on him. He pressed and made some bad decisions and some bad throws. He just straight up missed some guys. Mm-hmm. So, like I said earlier, you're going to get the unexpected in the Red River rivalry or shootout, whatever you want to call it. Good win for Texas. I still think Oklahoma is better.
I think, you know, and that's the thing, is Oklahoma, I think, is – much improved. I think I had them at 5 or 6 wins this year. I was not a big Brent Venables fan. I've been very, very critical. Mateo's done a great job. I'm right there with you. Where's Hawkins at? Hawkins should have been starting that game. Yeah. This game was a game where it was like a nice to have. It's not a must have for Oklahoma. What is most concerning with Oklahoma going forward is their absolutely lack of a running game. There is no running game. They got the kid from Cal, who was the ACC player of the year the last 2 years, and we can make all the jokes we want about the ACC. That kid's legit. And their inability to run the ball is what could keep Oklahoma, again, I'm going to consider them in those top 8 teams vying for the college football playoff, but given the road that they have coming up in the next few weeks, a lack of running game is going to make it very difficult for them to go anything better than 8-4 or 9-3 this year, especially with a I will say, somewhat limited John Mateer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we'll see as far as they go. I mean, the narrative has been that Jaden Ott's been banged up, and the question is, he's playing, but how much can he get back? Injuries may be something that pile up for Oklahoma now, as we see a banged up Jaden Ott not really getting ready throughout the course of the year. And now, what is the real status of John Mateer? Is that just a bad game? Is he rusty because he took a couple weeks off? Or is the thumb going to affect him long-term? We'll see. They head to Columbia, South Carolina next week, and we'll have a nice noon kickoff Eastern time.
Love it,
to try to rebound. Lou, thanks for coming on tonight. We appreciate your expert analysis. Make sure that you guys go follow him. It's real easy, @CFBLou, and you want to make sure that you're following along so you can grab all of his shows as well. We know that our college football fans here are just constantly drinking it in, and we're in the thick of it now. So make sure you go watch Lou as he breaks down LSU as they continue to try to make their way through the SEC gauntlet. We'll see where they end up. We'll see what happens with Garrett Nussmeier as well. Thanks again, Lou.
Thank you. Y'all have a good one, man.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be right back in just a minute, and we'll let you guys figure out what it looks like to fly a la Gunnar Stockton, and we'll have Craig McMichael on the breakdown.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team!
ETC is go.
Thank you. Go.
ETC is go.
LPS is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
FTM is go.
Safety comms is go.
FTU is go.
LRD is go.
FRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
It's SEC Sunday Night, presented by Hewitt Diamandouros. Visit hdlawsc.com. It's go time.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. Thanks again to our friend Lewis Johnson here with us tonight. Craig, let's jump into Georgia and Auburn, where really you had kind of a slugfest, back and forth, crazy type of environment there in Jordan-Hare. But you get what you get with Georgia and Auburn here. And yep. I'm going to throw this graphic up for you. But one thing that I'll highlight is I think that the end of the game tells the story and just the talent gap that exists. Auburn did a great job in the portal of elevating the talent that's on this team, but ultimately you get an 8-minute, 16-play drive with Gunnar Stockton flying into the end zone to seal it at the end of the game, and that really tells a story for me. This, I think, tells a story for you via the SEC Network here. Break it down for us and what you see.
Sure. One quick correction for you. It was an 8-minute, 49-second drive, and if Gunnar goes down, it would have been 10 minutes to end the game. So that was a beautiful thing. So we already yelled at each other about officiating, and don't worry, I love Rob. We're not mad at each other. Guy's my brother. We just have different opinions.
I've almost kicked you out of this show multiple times tonight. I have all the keys and the power over here in the producer seat.
King of the castle. King of the castle. All right. So, okay. Our buddy Jake Crane was upset last night. Jackson Arnold and the Tigers were looking invincible. Brother Hugh was in his bag for the first half. It looked like vintage Ole Miss. The Tigers could do no wrong when it came to offense and defense. Looking at it, it was about 2 minutes to go in the second half. Auburn had third and goal from the one. A quarterback sneak, a tush push. Auburn's up 17-0. Game could be over. Well, Jackson Arnold fumbled, or maybe he didn't, depending on your perspective, whether you wear the red and black or whether you're an Eagle, a Tiger, or whatever the heck you're supposed to be in Auburn.
So Jackson Arnold scored a touchdown.
Nope, he did not
score. That was called a fumble, and then this is what happened.
This is why, like, these young quarterbacks can't always be in the shotgun because they don't know how to take the snap, because that ball looked like it was moving from the start. Anyway, here is the key to the stat. That play took place with 2 minutes to go in the second quarter. You might as well have just said game over, because here's what happened. Auburn Twitter, Auburn Reddit went nuts. Hugh Freeze went nuts. Auburn's fans went nuts. Auburn players went nuts. Oh, my God. The officials are screwing us again. Boo, hoo, hoo. Pity on us. Georgia comes right back out. Hadn't moved the ball at all. They go 99 yards, kick a field goal, make it 10-3 at halftime. And what does Hugh Freeze do? He's, again, trying not to get fined here by trying to not, you know, cuss out the refs. But he's dwelling on how he is getting screwed. George is getting all of these extra plays, how long the game is. He's making excuses. Instead of being a good coach, saying, you know what, that really sucked, but we kicked the crap out of Georgia for a quarter and a half. And those stats tell everything. Georgia had 20 yards up until that point. It basically flipped. Auburn barely had 20 yards for the rest of that game. And you saw it in their body language. You saw it in the way they played. The offense and the defense could not make plays. Georgia just kept on going and kept on moving and was able to win that game. And here's when it mattered most. They got that ball back with about 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. They were up 13-10. Key third and fourth down conversions were, Gunnar Stockton was able to continue to extend the drive. And they were able to do what Auburn was not. Finish the game. Now, the other little problem and the other question was Kirby Smart, you know, clapping his hands or calling timeout, whatever it may have been. This is why this is a non-factor. Ball doesn't lie. Kirby Smart or Georgia gets a holding call right after that happens. And then Woodring misses a long field goal. Doesn't matter. Doesn't impact the outcome of the game. There's no points scored in there. So you have two opportunities. Sure. Could the officials got it wrong? Probably. But as a coach, your players will lead by your example. And if you are losing your mind and you are not maintaining control, they're going to lose control. Hugh Freeze admitted as much after the game in the press conference. He's saying all this bad stuff keeps happening to us and we need to make a change. Yes, Auburn does need to make a change, Hugh, and it starts with you.
I think that we completely disagree obviously about the officiating issues. However, we completely agree on the fact that it is on the coaches and the players to respond correctly to whatever adversity happens on the field. It doesn't matter what happens during the course of the game. This right here, I'll throw it back up for everybody in case you missed it a minute ago. This is unacceptable because it's a response to what was perceived to be a mistake in officiating. And no matter which side of the aisle that you land on, whether it was a mistake or whether it was a correct call, you're completely right, Craig, that this threw everything off for the Auburn Tigers, and they crumbled mentally under that pressure. Confidence is a key to moving forward and having success on the field and off of the field for another podcast or another show and another discussion. But for the purposes of our talk here, as it pertains to not just football, but to any sport, your frame of mind is going to matter more than anything else.
Yep.
Your preparation, your confidence in what you're doing and what you know how to do and what you've practiced, your ability to go out and out-execute an opponent mentally, to have a level of toughness that when you get punched in the mouth that you don't crumble like this. This right here is a testament to Georgia's resilience and a testament to the fact that they believed, no matter what the situation in the game was, no matter what had happened on the play before, they were able to flush that and move forward mentally to say, well, we believe that we can beat you on the next play. And we've seen teams do the opposite of this all throughout the day yesterday. Arkansas is a great example of a team who was down, tied the game with Tennessee, 17 at halftime. Tennessee comes out second half, goes up 34-17. And Arkansas is able to flush the fact that they just gave up 17 unanswered and storm back and made it a three-point game where they had an opportunity to win at the end of the game, right? Like, there are two different types of responses And I think this is something that we called for in the offseason, and we called for last year when Brother Hugh was throwing players under the bus. And I said, you know, I like his ability to develop quarterbacks, and I like the talent that he's building on the team. But the caveat was what you kept pointing out time and time again is his negativity and his mindset and his approach going to ultimately be what drags this team? And we're starting to see that kind of happen. Now, is it unfortunate that things happened to the Auburn Tigers in a couple of games where officiating seemed to be skewed against them? Yes, that's unfortunate. But I agree with you. Completely have to control your response, and your response cannot be to crumble, or you've lost before we even kick the ball off to begin the game.
Correct.
All right, we're going to hit one more quick break here before we get started with our It Just Means More Genius section. We have a couple more games to look at. Is Missouri actually good, Craig? We need to talk about that. Is
Vandy good? We got that question in the chat. We'll chat about that on the way back.
And where does Texas A&M fit into this whole thing? We've got a middle eight discussion. We'll be right back after this on live on the Chief Sports Network. This is SEC Sunday Night.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt D'Amadouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt D'Amadouros, we're on your team!
Oh, man! The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
Yo, what's up? Baby, let's go!
This is SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
Network. I want to remind you that you can find so much more on the Chief Sports Network, and that all begins with the Chief Sports app. If you have not downloaded, it's available on the Apple Store. It's available on Google Play. Make sure you get that so that you have access to Chief Sports South Carolina, Chief Sports America, where you'll find us, Chief Sports High School. So you get all of your high school streams. If you live in the state of South Carolina, so many schools have partnerships where you can go right into the app and you can get linked to their streams on Friday night so that you can tune in with what's going on there. And if we don't have your stream, there is the high school scoreboard as well that has every score in real time updating so that you can keep up with what's going on in this great state. If you are beyond in the great world of the SEC and in the whole country, if you're listening from abroad, we would love for you to continue to keep up with us. But also we have great shows here. College Football Forever with JC and Morgan is a weekly show that covers all of college football across the country, and we're excited to hear from those guys every week as well, along with our collection of Inside the Gamecocks shows, the morning show, the tailgate show, the late night show, so many options for you there as well. So make sure that you are tuned in with Chief Sports Network. Craig, We had some incredible games yesterday in the SEC. A couple things we haven't talked about. So let's start with Missouri. Obviously, yep. Alabama wins this game by three. But if we look at – I'm going to give you the rundown of what Missouri has left. Because I asked the question before with Joy about Ole Miss. And we know that Ole Miss scraped by yesterday. And, you know, lane's going to lane, right? And a win is a win at this point. And you know, I think that the Rebels just have to move on and move forward. Their schedule is now kind of set up for them. Even if they drop two of their last few for Ole Miss to make it in, the question is, what do we think about Missouri, Craig? What do we think about Missouri? So here's what they have coming up. They got to go to Auburn, and we know we just had that discussion. So that looks favorable for the Tigers.
Who are the officials?
We got to go to Vanderbilt, which will be an interesting matchup because two teams that really play a lot of the same style of football. They have an off week. They're going to get Texas A&M at home. Then they go to Mississippi State, Oklahoma in Norman, and they finish the season with Arkansas. So if they can get through that with only one more loss, Auburn, Vandy, A&M, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, and Arkansas, if they only drop one more game and you have a 10-2 Missouri team, does that team make it to the college football playoff? Is this team capable of that?
10-2 does, but I think probably more realistic, 8-4, 9-3. You look at Vanderbilt, might be tough. You know, I think you and I talked about it yesterday. I think Mississippi State is going to get somebody. You know, hats off to Jeff Levy. We don't say that very often, but
They're going to get somebody. They're better than they look. The record looks.
And here's the other part. You know, Mizzou's going to have to figure out what is life like outside Como. You know, Maggie's been able to get to those games pretty quickly because everything's been at home. Now she's going to have to go on the road. I think Oklahoma's also going to be tough. So, you know, I'm impressed with Missouri because I think this was our biggest complaint against Drink. He's done a really nice job with the Tigers. They're a little bit of an outlier in the SEC. But let's be honest, over the last couple of years, despite their really good runs, when it came when the rubber hit the road and they played those better teams, they were not competitive. You know, they did a great job yesterday. That was my upset pick of the week, thinking that Mizzou was going to knock off Alabama. Didn't happen, but damn, they made it close.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because I think that their style of play is what really intrigues me in terms of their ability to go on the road, because this is a team that that plays decent defense. They do a good job, especially in the front seven. I would have some questions about the secondary at times, but a decent defensive job there. But on offense, they're really just going to hit you in the mouth.
Yep.
And my thing, Craig, is that travels. And the way that these running backs play, the way that Ahmad Hardy runs angrily, and he's downhill and he wants to put his shoulder into somebody. Now, he did cough it up yesterday a little bit, but they were able to overcome some of those mistakes, and he continued to be productive. My question is just, you know, can they be successful? I tend to think they have a real shot at 10-2, definitely at 9-3. You know, our friend Mike Morgan, who is a part of the Chief Sports Network as well, has said that he believes a 9-3 SEC team is going to make the playoff eventually, if not this year. And so maybe Missouri falls into that conversation. You know, we've talked a lot about the middle eight, and you made the comment earlier, and we had it here in our Twitter thread or in our X thread, is that when we talk middle eight, we're typically talking about the flow of the game and how we want to, you know, execute the last four of the first half, first four of the second half. But there's a middle eight in terms of teams in the SEC that somebody's got to elevate, because I think this is a year we're getting four, maybe even five SEC teams into the college football playoff, because this SEC to me just looks light years better than the depth of the Big Ten. And I don't care what Dave Portnoy or anybody on Fox Big Noon Kickoff has to say. They are obviously going to lean that way. But, dude, let's go top to bottom after we get past Ohio State and I guess Indiana. I'm not really sure how they stack up against the rest of the SEC.
Well, that's the question. I think Nick Saban did a good job this week. He was talking about that very thing. You know, he talked about, you know, there's a question of depth. You know, Indiana's been pretty good. Oregon's pretty good. Ohio State's pretty good. Obviously, Penn State is not. USC might be good as long as they're playing on the West Coast. Michigan is probably another year away. The you know, the Big Ten is really – the Big Ten is lacking depth. You look at this week's AP poll, you've got Texas A&M at 4, Ole Miss 5, Alabama 6, Georgia 9, LSU 10, Tennessee 11, Oklahoma's 14, Missouri 16, Vandy 17, Texas is 21. That's 10 teams in there. Now, what's hard for us in SECville, we don't have the team that's number one. We don't have the number two. We are basically taking up spots 4 through 20. That's tough. That's hard. But it goes back to the same thing that we were talking about with Lou. The ceiling and the floor are so much closer, and that's where that depth is going to be. I think you're going to get 4 teams in from the SEC. I think the Big Ten probably only gets 2 or 3. I think the ACC gets 2. Big 12, are you looking outside of a Texas Tech upset? Probably not. But, you know, I think you're going to have about 4 or 5 teams from the SEC, and you're probably going to have about 8 or 9 of them vying for that spot.
I can see a world, and we talked about this yesterday, I can see a world where we're going to get 5 SEC teams, 3 from the Big Ten, and then you're going to get 1 ACC, 1 Big 12, 1 G6, and then a Notre Dame sneaks in as the last team, and you would consider them an ACC team. But we'll kind of see how that plays out. But if it is 5 SEC teams, who is it? You know, let's run down this list really quickly, and then we'll get into some message boards. You got, you know, Alabama is certainly still in contention for this. Georgia, Ole Miss looks great. There's some 3 big ones. Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas A&M. Dare I say Vanderbilt?
What about the team you picked to win the SEC championship?
Yeah, I'm looking at LSU's schedule. They've already. I agree with you. I think that they're a legitimate contender.
Yeah.
And what's left is Vanderbilt, who, by the way, opened as a favorite over LSU next week. Just in case anybody missed that. Then they have Texas A&M, which will be quite a battle. Alabama, Arkansas, Western Kentucky, and Oklahoma. We just still have some question marks. What is Oklahoma going to be by the end of the year? But also, who is LSU going to be? Is Garrett Nussmeier going to be able to stand up by the end of the year? I'm not sure.
Right, and I think we have the same questions about Texas A&M. You know,
hey, Maggie, by the way, good to see you over there.
Thanks, Maggie. We'll be in Como if we get the playoff game. You and Brett can host the tailgate, so we'll be looking forward to that. I know I'll be invited. Rob will not be, but
they have
that's
plenty
okay.
of practice. They have plenty of practice. They only play home games, actually. It's a new phenomenon.
Wow. Easy with the pokes. But here, you know, the thought is with Texas A&M, you know, they've had a hard time counting past 8, you know, mostly. They're usually 8-4, but it does seem different this year. But I can't help but think, like, you know, it's a common phrase tonight. I feel like we should just name the show. Is blank good? Is Texas A&M good? We saw them give up 40-some points to Notre Dame. They've done really well. They basically shut out Auburn. Their run defense looks really good. They did a good job, really. I think Lagway and the Gators, you know, put up a nice fight for a half. But then Texas A&M just said, okay, that's cute. You know, we're going to move on. We're going to move on with this. But, you know, like, I think A&M's legit. I think A&M's probably a 10-2 team.
Stop the press. Hold on. I have to tweet. Right. I'm sorry. Keep talking, but I just can't believe those words just came out of your mouth. He just said he thinks Texas A&M is for real. Is that the quote?
He said legit. Legit.
I just want to make sure I get the quote right. I have to get the quote right because this needs to go on. This needs to go out immediately.
Tag David on there. Would you say Craig is actually being nice? Our buddy David Walker.
I can't believe you just said it.
But I'm being honest, like, they have the recipe for success this year. You know, I'm one of the biggest haters. I didn't know what the heck they were doing yesterday with the cream-colored pants and the uniforms. I didn't think that looked good. I just – it was a look for sure. But, like, they can run the hell out of the ball, and they play a lot of defense. And if you can do that, then 10-2 is probably likely in Texas A&M's future. I think you have a fraud alert somewhere in the LSU, Tennessee, Oklahoma. I don't want to say Missouri's a fraud. I'm not saying Missouri's a fraud, so Maggie, please don't take this the wrong way. But what I am saying is exactly what I just said a couple of minutes ago. Can they be 10-2, or are they going to be closer to 8-4? And I think
I don't see a world where they're 8-4.
I think that's worst case scenario. I think 9-3 is probably more likely.
Can I ask you one more question, and then we're going to go to these message boards?
Always ask me a question.
All right.
I'm here for you, buddy.
Ole Miss. We saw what they did yesterday. I have to run through the schedule. I have to do it. Georgia, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Citadel, Florida, Mississippi State. They can afford to drop two and make it to the college football playoff. Are they a lock?
I feel like they're a lock because here's the thing. We're super critical of Lane winning that game by 3 points against Washington State. Lane loses that game in most years because he plays with his food and he figures it out. He found a way to win. I think Lane probably ends up 10-2. I think your best team in the SEC this year. I think we're going to have 2 10-2 teams meeting in Atlanta for the SEC championship. I don't know who those two teams are yet, but I do not see an 11-1. I do not, you know, obviously I'm not going to see a 12-0, but I think we're going to have 2 10-2 teams. So I think you'll have probably 2 or 3 10-2 teams. And then you'll probably have another 3 or 4 9-3 teams from which the committee will have to pick out.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for the invite, Maggie.
Yep, we'll be there, Maggie. If you guys make it to the playoff, we're headed. We're going. She points out that we both picked. I'll throw this one up.
Yes.
That we both picked 6-6.
Listen.
We did, but we were wrong.
Rob made me do it.
Around here.
Rob made me do it. I just was copying his homework. I didn't change it enough.
All right, Craig, let's begin here. Before we get to message boards, let's give a shout-out to our good friend David Soderquist, who wants to know, is there news on the Florida front? Pete Thamel says, sources, Oregon State has fired Trent Bray after an 0-7 start for the Beavers. And David, of course, with the comeback here. Any Florida news, Pete? I think Joy was actually right last week when she said that Billy makes it to the end of the year.
So, David, you know, shout out to him. He was fantastic when he was on preseason. He was –
I've got him on speed dial for whenever this news actually lands.
Right. I think he's got it on speed dial, too, because I think he'll be busy. But, David has been very active. He is definitely not a fan of Billy Napier. The Gators, I believe, are at Mississippi State in 2 weeks, and then they have a bye week. That might be your exit strategy. Get rid of Billy just before the cocktail party. So I'm going to foresee that is probably going to happen. Staples was talking quite a bit. Basically, it sounds like it's a done deal. They have the money. They have the dollars.
I think it's a done deal.
I think it's a done deal. If you had a president that was in place, I think you would also see the athletic director, Scott Strickland, probably get let go. But because of the interesting situation that is Gainesville.
Interesting, I think it is.
Yeah, I'll just leave it at that and keep my granola. But I think Strickland gets to make one more hire. And I saw somewhere where they said, oh, James Franklin could be there. And I'm like, oh, please.
That would be hilarious. I would find that to be extremely funny if James Franklin lands in Gainesville. I think that's a terrible move. You and I have both said, or you have said as of late, yep. Shannon Dawson.
Yep.
But historically, we have said that we think Eli Drinkwitz makes a lot of sense in Gainesville. He wears the visor. He walks with the swagger because he's a Spurrier guy. It would make a whole lot of sense. But, hey, he's on the hot board to head to Happy Valley, too. So maybe we're going to see Drink on the move. Regardless, Maggie, you're here. Feel free to chime in. Okay. I agree with you. That if they lose to Mississippi State, if this is the game where Lebby clips somebody, that bye week could be interesting. Maggie has switched from X to YouTube. All right, let's go to the next one. Dan All right. Lanning, go ahead, read it all for us.
Yep. So this is a shout out to our good buddy MBG. Dan Lanning is a poor man's Billy Napier. Lanning from JV Flax 1. Poor man's Billy. That's all. I don't even know what the hell this means.
I guess because he lost to Indiana, but or maybe somebody suggested Dan Lanning as a replacement. I'm guessing that's what this is. That Dan Lanning is suggested.
At what point is he a poor man's Billy Napier? Billy Napier was at Louisiana Lafayette. Dan Lanning won a Big Ten championship and was undefeated in conference play until yesterday.
And Dan Lanning has a lot of personality, and we still have APB out on Billy's personality. We haven't been able to find it yet.
You know who does have a good personality? Speaking of coaches with a great personality, Maggie, you'll appreciate this. Eli Drinkowitz has a great personality, and we think that he is fantastic.
All right, moving on to the Plains. Another shout out. Actually, let me go with this one first.
All right.
This is another shout out to MBG.
So, who do we have? So, I think we've had three SEC teams volunteering for the ACC. I think the Cox were the Gamecocks were last week.
Yeah, we kicked that guy out. I don't know who that was.
But Auburn should join the ACC. Screw it. Let's commit to the ACC. This is from Jabba. He's a Heisman voter, apparently. And dominate without beating SEC teams in Beham. I'm so done with all of this. I don't know how to pronounce all those asterisks. I'm not sure what that means.
I don't understand this strategy. I don't understand why teams or fans, let me say that, because this is obviously the extreme. And this is the purpose of this segment. If you're new here, we want to say hello as we finish up here with the it just means more, genius. But yeah, our purpose of highlighting this is so that everybody knows the level of fandom that exists in the SEC world, okay? Auburn is so tired of losing that we have fans ready to go to the ACC. Not anywhere else, by the way. The ACC.
Nope. They would be great in the Fun Belt, wouldn't they?
The Power Four.
Auburn kind of seems like a Big 12 team, don't they?
They would fit. I'd rather go there than at least the Big 12 is fun.
Let's ask the chat. Would we be able to get a Big 12 discount at Waffle House if Auburn joins the Big 12?
I don't think so. All right. Keeping with Auburn.
All right. From Auburn Sports, Saban, because God forbid if we have the coaching carousel, we need that. This is from Bucks 1993. Oh, he might be actually younger than you, Rob.
I was born in 94. Keep it pushing.
God, I was 11 years old when you were born. Do the math, everybody.
Continue.
What does that mean?
I'm not really sure.
I think he's thinking about what that means.
I'm not really sure what the end of the sentence was happening here, but I take the beginning of the sentence to mean that there is a need to pay for Nick Saban to come coach the Auburn Tigers. Is that how you interpret this post?
That's what I did, but didn't Nick have like barely a winning record at Jordan-Hare?
Yeah, and he actually highlighted that on College Game Day yesterday morning as well. He made the statement that his record there was terrible. It's the only stadium where he had a losing record in his career. But this will never not be funny, right? Because rivalries are the heartbeat of the sport, and here we have Auburn fans asking to please go and get the man that we all know they have hated for some time now, after his tenure at first LSU and then of course in Tuscaloosa.
So does he go from LSU to Alabama to Auburn, and then does he end his career in Georgia then? Like he just hit all of the rivals?
Serious question. Do we think that he's going to come back?
Absolutely not. Is
there a chance?
No.
I wouldn't come back if I was him.
Where would you go? Like, look at the jobs that are open. You're not going to the Big Ten. You're not going to Florida. You're not going to Auburn. Is he going to go to Arkansas? Maybe. No, he's not coming back. There's no chance he's coming back.
We'll see.
Would he go to Mizzou?
We'll leave it up. Well, you know, when Eli leaves for a better job, maybe they'll call Nick Saban.
He just got unfollowed.
We'll check in on Maggie and see how she's doing. But for the rest of all of you lovely listeners and fans and friends out there, we hope you've had a great night and a great week. Week 7 is in the books, Craig. And it'll be time for us next week with a brand new slate, just as a rundown for everybody so that we don't forget. Next week, Oklahoma at South Carolina, LSU at Vanderbilt, where Vanderbilt is a 2.5-point favorite now. Texas A&M goes to Arkansas, Mississippi State at Florida. Watch out for the Gators. Texas at Kentucky. Could there be a letdown in Lexington? Tennessee, Alabama. Missouri finally hits the road and goes to the Plains. And, of course, our game of the week, Ole Miss at Georgia. Georgia, 6.5-point favorite. Hotty toddy, baby. We'll see you next week. This is SEC Sunday Night live on the Chief Sports Network.